Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to a special edition of the Four Scenes Fire American Soccer Show as we talk about the New York Red Bulls in their 0-0 draw against Real Salt Lake. Now, for some of you that are wondering why it's not a full show, because once again, this is the international break, and normally I would not do a show on a Monday during the international break. I'd like to just take a break from talking about the club scene and, you know, concentrate more on the international scene with the U.S. men's national team during World Cup qualifying, of course. So it's only an hour show today, but I just wanted to just discuss about the Red Bulls today. But let me just say this right now. Let me just quickly go back to what happened this past Friday at Avaya Stadium in San Jose, California. That was probably the best performance I have ever seen in a World Cup qualifier, probably since the first Dos Aceros in Columbus, Ohio, going to qualify for the 2002 FIFA World Cup for South Korea and Japan. That, in my mind, in my personal estimation, you could probably ask Grant Wall, you could probably ask Stephen Goff for the Washington Post, or Michael Lewis, now a front row soccer, that they've probably seen better performances as well. But in my book, in World Cup qualifying, that was the best performance I've ever seen the U.S. men's national team play. And you know what? You just have to say that what you saw was a rejuvenated men's national team. What you saw was basically how Bruce Arena likes to qualify for the World Cup and how he put his players in position to win. That's right, how he put his players in a position to win. And that was absolutely incredible to watch this past Friday night. What you saw at the same time, worried about Clint Dempsey because you don't know if he's going to go for the full 90. But you know what? It looks like he's back to his old self. It looks like he's ready to take on the world. Clint Dempsey is back, and for the past years, I've criticized him. And believe me, they were warranted to be criticized for what Clint Dempsey has done in the past in a national team shirt, because at times it looked like he didn't want to be there. Now I think he recognizes how much, not just missing the game club-wise, but missing games wearing that red, white, and blue shirt, wearing that American national team shirt, and playing the game how he's always wanted to play. Clint Dempsey is back, and he's a bad ass. I'm not lying. Clint Dempsey is back. And even though I have said that Michael Bradley is now obsolete for the national team, which is really not true. He's not completely obsolete, and I'll take that back. But the truth is this. He's not holding midfielder. He never even was a holding midfielder. He's an attacking midfielder who has plenty of attacking prowess and can score. The problem was his father asked him to play a holding midfield position because apparently maybe he felt Michael wasn't good enough to be an attacking player, which he really is. He should never, ever be in a deep midfield position. He should never hold the ball. He should just have the ball, attack the opposition, and that's why he scored when he scored. That was unbelievable, unbelievable what we saw from the U.S. men's national team. And let me just say this right now. Right now, in Panama, while this has been a great win, we can't go completely bonkers, but if they can perform that way again, they don't have to score six down in Panama. But if they can go down to Panama and do that again and make it, you know, 3-0, 3-1, 2-1, 3-1, 3-0, 2-0. Anything more, scoring more goals than Panama, they are back. They are back and ready to go. How they came back and erased that negative goal differential was just unbelievable. Just an unbelievable moment seeing what they did. I couldn't believe what I saw. And that, my friends, that. And just to see the hat trick by Clint Dempsey was unbelievable. And just to see Christian Pulisic attacking and attacking and attacking. Too bad he couldn't get the opening goal, because obviously if that ball wasn't stopped or deflected towards Leggett, that's 3 for Dempsey, 2 for Pulisic, and 1 for Michael Bradley. That is how good this kid is. This is how good this kid can be. And he is the future of the national team. Now, we can't overhype him. We have seen what happened to some of these past players who have been overhyped. They start off strong, and then they just fizzle out. Agudelo, Freddie Adu. We got to not heap all this praise onto the shoulders of Christian Pulisic. And at the same time, I don't think he's even listening to all of this. I just don't think he's even paying attention to all this. He's just doing what he is doing, and that is it. He is looking strong. He is looking solid. And you know what, guys? The U.S. men's national team right now is just absolutely fabulous at the moment. So let's move on now. This is a Red Bulls review show from this past Saturday. 0-0 draw. Here's what I'm going to say right now about the 4-2-2-2. I think right now, and if Jesse Marsh is going to continue to use it, he's got to find a way to get these guys motivated and ready to go at the opening 45 once that opening whistle blows, because they keep on changing things up at half. And the truth is this, is that right now the players are not in sync into this new formation. I believe at this particular point in time for the New York Red Bulls, if they're going to truly stick with it, they're going to have to stick with it throughout the entire game. Maybe at times it might look like they've switched up to a 4-2-3-1. I just think it's still a 4-2-2-2. They're just interchanging the players in certain positions. Look what happened when Sean Davis came into the match. All he did was, Jesse Marsh, all he did was push Felipe into a higher position in the midfield while Davis and Tyler Adams were the back two in the midfield and Felipe was an attacking player. So all you can say is that it's going to take time, and Jesse Marsh even said it was going to take time. But will there be a point where he's going to have to go back to the 4-2-3-1 or the 4-5-1, however you want to put it? It might happen. I don't know. It could happen. It all depends on what Jesse's going to try and do. Maybe. And let me just say this. While, you know, it's nice to see Bradley having a striker partner up top with him or playing a little bit withdrawn. But all I can say is this, is that right now it's growing pains with a brand new formation. If I can say this, maybe it could be a 3-5-2. But then again, there'll be more issues in the back line. So right now, I mean, you know, a suggestion was a 4-3-3. And you never know. It could be positioned differently. I mean, you can still have two up top and maybe one midfielder behind the strikers, but in a wide position, and the other three, you know, in midfield. I mean, you could have two central, you can have your central midfielder, or creative midfielder, and then you have the two defenders out on the wings, or at least halfway down. So we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen with Jesse Marsh in that one. But, you know, what we saw, a little hijinks, a little calamity early in the first half. But once again, I just think right now it is growing pains. Things will get better as the season goes along. But obviously, knowing Jesse, if something is going to be fixed, he will find a way to fix it. I just think right now it's only growing pains. And we'll see what's going to happen. Now I'd like to talk about something, you know, to the fans. This is not aimed at the South Ward. We know you guys are there every single home game, and it's great. This is not me having a go, but I'm actually giving some concerns here. It's a little disappointing that these past two Saturday home games, Red Bull Arena was not filled to the hilt like it normally is. And I understand the time, the start time, was not what it should be. The truth is, MLS never even mentioned, and which I'm going to blame them for this one, the league did not mention that Univision or Unimas is probably not doing Friday night games. They've decided to make it late Saturday afternoons. Now, for those of you that have children and they have their AYSO games, you know, this is not your fault. And at the same time, it's not so much about it being cold and dreary or anything like that, but still, you just have to say that this is the issue that has always been plaguing this club on early, mid, or late Saturday afternoon games around March and April. This has always been an issue. It doesn't matter if it's Thierry Henry, Juan Pablo Angel, Lothar Matthäus, Giovanni Savarese, Tim Cahill, Kenny Cooper, and right now Bradley Wright Phillips. This has always been an issue, and there's nothing you can do about it. I think Univision, Unimas, well, actually it's always going to be Univision, they need to go and find a way to have themselves, I would say, you know, have a better time to start their matches, because obviously people got upset last year on Friday nights where it was the picture-in-picture with the MLS game of the week and the Liga MX game of the week, you know, split-screen baloney. So that, once again, has to be fixed. So we'll see what happens, and hopefully we won't have any more issues with that. But all I can say is I think a solid result for both sides, and definitely for the Red Bulls. It's not bad. 7 points in its first four games. I'll take it. I would take it, actually, with the way the start has gone so far this year. So once again, it's a shortened show, but you know what? I'd like to get the Real Salt Lake perspective of this matchup. And joining me right now, of course, you know him for Fox Soccer, Fox Sports 1, ESPN, fills in as an analyst during MLS games. He's also the analyst for Real Salt Lake locally over in Utah. Brian Dunseth is joining us. Dunny, how are you, and welcome back?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Everything's fine. Listen, before we even get to our match from this past Saturday, what you saw Friday night with the U.S. men's national team, what did that tell you, seeing this scoreline of 6-0, and what are the differences you saw from this match than the past couple of years?
Oh, man. okay, here it comes. Passion, desire, aptitude for what they were doing tactically. Guys that were relaxed and focused and intent on rectifying a situation. And what it spoke to me even more so wasn't so much what Bruce Arena brings to the equation, because we're constantly aware of that. It was really how bad it was was underneath Jurgen Klinsmann every time those players were called in. It's one thing to want to represent the badge. It's another thing to really not want to go in and be a part of those camps based on the atmosphere that was being procured and produced time and time again. I saw a bunch of guys that were playing for each other that had passion, that had heart, and that tactically knew exactly what was being asked of them and came out and executed almost to a flawless perspective. That was the first time in a long time I think I could say that was the closest full 90-minute performance that I've seen from the United States and hands down, bare minimum, the last 4 years.
Would you say if this match, while it's nice seeing them score six, did you feel if they didn't, yield, not so much surrendering, but you know, showing mercy, this could have been 10, 12, maybe even 15 goals?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, and I've been a part of Bruce's national team camp, the one thing that he always stresses is the value of goals. The value of goals for yourself, the value of goals for your opponents. And I think time and time again, especially if we've seen in qualifying, it may not always be the United States, but it's somebody in this hexagonal that goal differential plays a massive, massive role. So, yeah, it could have been worse. But Kelly could have made it 3-1 in the dying moments of that first half when he hit the post. But, yeah, I mean, this was a bloodthirsty bunch of players. And, by the way, Clint Dempsey's back and Christian Pulisic.
Yeah.
This is no longer hype. These two guys were playing as kind of dueling number 10 underneath Josie. And I thought I can't point to one guy and say that he was poor, that he wasn't good enough, or that he was even average. I think the collective performance, it outshined everything that we've seen in a U.S. jersey and was really ultimately, and I'm not trying to make this a personal thing, but to me, this was an indictment of how bad it truly was underneath Jurgen Klinsmann.
Definitely agree with you there, Dunny. I have to tell you that sometimes even great strikers, when they've played this game wonderfully, sometimes they're not good enough to be a tactician. They're not good enough to be a head coach, as I like to say it. We got the wrong German. So,
I have the utmost respect for Jurgen Klinsmann, and he was nothing
absolutely
but phenomenal to me personally every time I was a part of those U.S. broadcasts, whether being as a sideline guy or an analyst up in the booth. Jurgen, to me, is an ideas guy. And, you know, it takes a special type of coach to be able to convey the ideas in simple terms that the players understand, not only individually, but collectively. And time again, I found myself going back and thinking about Jurgen Klinsmann, the player, and trying to put myself in his shoes as Jurgen Klinsmann, the coach. And I don't think that Jurgen was tactically inept. I think it really came down to the inability to convey exactly what he wanted. Because imagine Jurgen Klinsmann talking to Josie Altidore or Bobby Wood or Sasha Kljestan or whoever, and just saying, this is what I want, and kind of watching those guys go out and execute it and say, no, that's not good enough. How are you so stupid? How do you not recognize this? And even in training, you know, picking out the top corner of the cobweb and saying, guys, it's easy, just do this. I think there was always a little bit of a struggle in the idea of coaching versus teaching. And I think Jurgen is a phenomenal ideas guy, but I think maybe with the execution and the loyalty to Bernie Vogt and Andy Herzog, that information was not conveyed and absorbed by a majority of these U.S. players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you there, Dunny, and hopefully for Jurgen, he'll be able to get back on his feet and maybe manage somewhere. Who knows? Maybe he's done with it. We'll see what happens. Let's go ahead with this matchup on Saturday. First things first, why was Jeff Kassar allowed to start the season and then all of a sudden he's sacked after three games?
Well, it's starting to trickle out, but when Jeff Kassar was first offered the extension, it was in early August, and at the time, Real Salt Lake was in sole possession of second place. Then things, results-wise, started going sideways with the injuries to Jura, Burrito, and Plata. But during that time, kind of the back and forth of a contract offer, an agent getting involved, and then the final signing off from Jeff Kassar, the signing off from Deloitte Hansen, the owner, and then it being in the middle of the playoffs and kind of backing into the playoffs, much like the Philadelphia Union, I think from a public perspective, it was better, a PR perspective, maybe it was better just to hold on and wait till the end of the season to announce it. In that same time period, Burrito Martinez announced that he was leaving. Javier Morales' not-so-great departure was in the middle of it. So if you ask me if Jeff Kassar deserved the contract extension, I think he deserved another opportunity because he made the playoffs twice in those first 3 years. And that's a big time period where Jason Kreis has left. Bill Manning, the president, has gone to Toronto. Garth Lagerwey, the general manager, has gone to Seattle. The Real Monarchs have started, and they're bringing the entire youth academy to Utah. So things behind the scenes were growing tremendously over that time period. But I think Craig Weibel said it best. Between he and the owner, Deloitte Hansen, there were metrics that Jeff Kassar was being measured by. Those are not public metrics. Those are private metrics. And at the end of the day, after the results against L.A., which I thought the first 45 minutes they were good before Kyle Beckman got that red card, maybe there's a little bit of a stay of execution. But the reality is, I think those metrics not being met early in the season at the time with 31 games remaining and 91% of the season remaining, it was very important if you're going to make this decision, if you thought you were going to make the decision at some point in the season, it was better to make it now than wait until May and find yourself out of touch with the playoff race.
So Daryl Shore, he's your interim head coach. Now, I've met Daryl when he was down in Fort Lauderdale with the Strikers. Very nice man. He's a local from New Jersey, of course. What did you see in the 90 minutes against the Red Bulls where you think maybe the start of riding the ship looked pretty solid in that match?
He stabilized it. I think he and Freddie Juarez and Tyrell Marshall, the coaching staff, really stabilized it. From shock and awe on Monday and Tuesday to Wednesday, kind of getting down to the brass tacks of how New York is a little bit different this year. No longer kind of playing that hybrid of a 4-2-3-1, playing more of a narrow 4-2-2-2. I think Daryl's been around the block, and he had filled in for Jeff Kassar on a couple occasions when Kassar was suspended for one reason or another. But with missing nine guys because of injuries, playoff or suspension, international duty, a bulk of that team was missing. And I've been saying for a while now and beating the drum that this is the deepest RSL squad that they've ever assembled. It may not be the best team, but it's the deepest team. And I think it showed it, you know, the three great opportunities between Brooks Lennon and Yura Mobsisian in particular. I thought the partnership of Chris Schuler and Aaron Mond was very good. It was really one-way traffic about 10 minutes into the second half with New York dominating long stretches. And the bench, you know, there was no real presence to help out Sonny or Luke on the bench available. So they just kind of, they bent quite a bit. They didn't break the debut of Matt Van Uncle getting his first shutout. I heard you coming on right before I came on. It's a very, very good result for Real Salt Lake. Even if Salt Lake is 100% fit with their strongest starting 11, with the fortress that's been Red Bull Arena over the past 5 years, I think any team that walks out of there with points says, yep, we'll absolutely take it, and next time we have them at our place, we'll beat them. So it was a good result with everything going on.
How about that that nutty moment in the eighth minute? Poor ball stolen by Salt Lake and nailing the post with Saucedo. And then I think it was Mulholland. I know it wasn't Movsisian because I know he tried to make that cross and it was missed by Saucedo. But post shot, rebound, save off the line by Adams. I mean, that was awesome.
Yeah, it really was. And that's kind of what we've seen really in these last two games quite frequently with Bofo Saucedo and Brooks Lennon, the 220 wide players. Their fitness and sharpness coming off the CONCACAF tournament. And you can see it with Tyler Adams, who I thought was absolutely fantastic in his partnership with Felipe. They were just fit. They're hungry. They want to prove themselves. They're young kids. And now they know who their opponents are in the Under-20 World Cup in June. So, you know, kids that are getting their opportunity, and in particular with Bofo and Brooks, they want to press high. They want to defend. They want to outwork you. And that we saw that on three or four different occasions. Even the Connor laid back pass at the start of the second half was really dicey as well with that huge save from Luis Robles on Yerem Ovsisian. But as this team continues, it's going to be really hard for Jordan Allen and Joao Plata. I think Plata is immediately going to go back to the side when he's available. But Brooks Lennon, I don't think he gives up his spot on the right-hand side.
Yep, I definitely agree with you. I'm telling you, Brooks Lennon seems to be a great pickup for Real Salt Lake, Dunny, and I really think so far it's been looking solid at this particular point in time. Before I let you go, where do you see Salt Lake with this season when they get everyone healthy, back from suspensions, back from their national teams during their national break? How good, and shall I say this, how will they react with Daryl Shore as the interim coach, and do you think he'll get the permanent job?
I don't think. Well, yeah, I don't think Daryl will get the job, and I don't mean that maliciously because I think he's a great guy. I think you have a couple of options, and for me, I've been saying basically the three options are Giovanni Savarese. But I don't know if they're willing to part with him. I really like, oh my gosh, I'm going blank right now, University of Washington, Jamie Clark. Mm-hmm. I think he's got the capabilities of being the next kind of Caleb Porter right out of college. And the big one's going to be Mike Pecky. You know, with Mike, he's already under the umbrella. I know Deloy Hansen really likes him. If you watch that Real Monarchs game against the Portland Timbers the other night, put T2, the Monarchs won 2-1, and they looked fantastic. And I think Mike, just with a few weeks, has gotten the most. I know how beloved Mike Pecky is to the New York Red Bull family, the fans. It was horrific and unceremonious the way he was departed and pushed out the door. He's a good buddy of mine, so I'll sing his praises, and I'm probably wearing rose-tinted glasses on this. But he deserves to be on the sideline in Major League Soccer. So if I was hedging odds on this, I would say that Mike Pecky's got the best shot of being named the head coach, the next head coach of Real Salt Lake. But it all comes down to the owner, Deloy Hansen, and exactly what Craig Weibel, the general manager, has brought to him.
You know, having Mike, when he got the job, it was a complete shock. And, you know, he's still revered over here by the fans. I mean, you know, one of our own, not just a player, but from the area, assistant coach after he retired. And then Bakke was not retained. And, you know, that supporter shield, that he'll always be measured by that first year, winning the first ever major trophy by the club. And you know what? I wouldn't be shocked if it was Mike leaving – or being promoted from the Monarchs to the top side. But, Dunny, thank you again as always. I always appreciate it. Have a good night. And, by the way, how's your counterattack show going on SiriusXM?
Oh, I love it, my man. I got Miola back. So, big old meat hands and I'm making fun of him every day about how completely out of touch he is on social media. I've scared him because Every game is going to be televised on Facebook, and he just CSI stalks people on Facebook through his wife's account. I did get him to open up the tweet deck, so he's excited. Now I just have to teach him how to upload pictures to tweet deck.
That's right.
I have a good time, man. He is salt of the earth. He's one of my favorite human beings. He was always incredible to me, even when he was a superstar with the national team, and I was just this little 20-year-old rug rat getting called in underneath Steve Sampson. So I love him to death. I'm so excited about having him back. And, man, oh, man, do we have a – 2 hours goes really fast when I'm talking soccer with Tony Meola.
Oh, I don't blame you. And Tony's always been a great person, special as a player. When the club honored him and he talked to the media, you can tell the love out of his voice and the passion he has for the game in the United States. It's just wonderful to hear Tony talk. And too bad his time as head coach of the Jacksonville Armada just didn't last longer than it did. I thought he did some decent things, but you know what? Look, I'm glad he's back doing the show with you. And you know what? You have fun with them.
I definitely will, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you coming on. Take care, Dunny. Take it easy.
I'll speak with you.
All right, bye-bye. All right, thanks. Bye. Brian Dunseth on SiriusXM, of course, doing the counterattack show on SiriusXM. He's also a TV analyst for Real Salt Lake, and he also does occasionally Fox Soccer, Fox Sports 1 broadcasts, ESPN broadcasts, and you know, look, it's a lot of fun. It's very entertaining, and you know, you gotta love what he does. So, hopefully, more will be coming from him. All right, guys, this is a Red Bull show, obviously today for an hour. So let's get off and get on with the audio. Head coach Jesse Marsh on the performance on Saturday. Jesse,
Jesse, obviously it wasn't a bad match, but not having Sasha do the international duty, it looked like it was a little bit challenging out there for the guys on the offensive end.
Well, I mean, listen, Sasha's a huge player for us in terms of creating chances. But, I mean, we had plenty of chances. We had plenty of chances to get a goal, to get a win. You know, and so we went through this a little bit at the beginning of last year, you know, where we couldn't quite find a way to get ourselves going enough. And so, you know, we're at that moment a little bit now, but... You know, what did I say last year? I said, it's going to come together, we're going to score goals, there's going to be, you know, it's taking a little bit of time, but we all know what we have here and that it's going to come together. So I could go back and say that again. And the good, listen, it would have been nice to get a win tonight at 3 points because it continues to give us time to feel good and feel positive energy with everything coming together and then knowing that it'll come around eventually. We didn't manage to do that, but... I still feel like there's a lot of really good performances on the day. I feel like Connor Wade came in and for 60 minutes was pretty much our best player, played really well. Thought Aaron Long continues to do well. Luis gets a clean sheet. Kamar Lawrence comes back and does fairly well. Tyler Adams, thought Tyler Adams was very good. So, and then, you know, Felipe's been very good all year. So, you know, I mean, there's still plenty of positives to take away from it. It's just you feel like you let 2 points slip away.
Another game where you started in the 4-2-2-2 and then ended up in the 4-2-3-1. Can you talk about how come you don't stick with the 4-2-3-1 from the beginning of the match, especially considering how many more chances you got in the second half tonight or today?
Yeah, well, I feel, listen, so we, in the Atlanta game, we didn't go to three. We stayed with two the whole match. And then some of these other games, we feel like, given what the game is like, teams are making decisions to not allow us to not play, right? So Salt Lake on the day says we're just going to kick the ball at the field every time. So what does that do? Well, it then means that some of our pressure and our pressure tactics don't ever get rewarded because it's not part of the game. So, and then it becomes often a battle of second balls. And then if we don't feel like our two strikers are doing enough to come underneath to start to pick up balls, then the way to deal with that is to maybe put another one in there. And then in addition, if now we're trying to break things down and we're not getting Sasha on the ball enough, or in this game we feel like we need one more guy to get that in the final third can piece together a play, and on that on the day it's Felipe, then that's a tactical adjustment we can make. There will be games where we start with three. I promise you that, you know, but it's about now trying to figure out, given the day and given our personnel and what we're working on and what we're working through, what we think is best. Not getting the result tonight, or the 3 points for me, is nothing to do with two or three. It has to do with just now not taking our advantage as well.
Coach, what are your thoughts on being one of the six teams to play a game during the international break?
I don't like it. I don't understand it. You know, these are things for you to ask the league. There's often things that I don't quite get, but, you know, in the end, it's okay because it gives us a rhythm right now of playing games. But, yeah, I'd much rather have both teams be able to have their full complement of players.
Jesse, in having given the starting nod to Tyler Adams, what do you think he brings in midfield as opposed to Sean Davis?
Well, I won't compare the two. I'll just talk about Tyler, okay? And I'll say that Tyler is tenacious in there. He's aggressive. He's confident on the ball. You know, he's still, I think, that's the thing that he's still developing, is the savviness and sense of how to move around with the game and set plays up in front of him. But I thought overall that was pretty good tonight. You know, he wins his duels. He's fast in there. He covers ground. He pressures well, breaks up plays. He's a competitor, so I mean, I could go on because we think so highly of him and know that it's only a matter of him getting repetition for him to continue to elevate his status within the team and continue to develop as a player.
Jesse, two questions. One, how cynical did you think the Real Salt Lake became in the second half? They had three yellows in 5 minutes, and we don't see that every day.
Yeah.
And could you elaborate on why you decided to start Connor Lade at right back? What did you see in training that you said, hey, this is the time?
Yeah. So the first part is, this is not a new tactic of playing the Red Bulls, okay? Don't allow their pressure. Foul them when we get on the counter. You know, break up their play when they have the ball. Make it hard on their good attacking players. You know, we've tried to alert pro in the league that this is and then slow the game down almost obnoxiously. We've tried to make that clear to pro and to the league that this is a tactic, and then that's not good for the league. Like, if you want to watch entertaining football, then when a team when they foul or get a throw in or a goal kick and take 30 seconds every time, nobody pays money to see that. Okay. In an entertainment business, nobody pays money to see that. But it took halftime. I mean, we were reminding the fourth official, trying to get the word out to the first official. And then even when they started the second half, he didn't want to do it until like the 60th minute. You got me going. What was the second?
Connor Lade.
Connor, listen, what you see with him is he's just, his energy and will is so big. You know, I mean, he'll always get judged for his size, but he'll never get judged for his heart. And I think that's truly what makes him a big player. And so, you know, as much as we knew he wasn't 90 minutes fit, we wanted him on the field. We want to get him going. I think we've been patient enough. And so I've been challenging our medical staff because they've asked me to be patient. And I keep telling them that I'm impatient. So it was time to get Connor going, and I thought he was fantastic. I thought the first half he was our best player. He got a little bit fatigued in the second half, but we're going to continue to build on that performance for him.
Coach, considering that this is a very weak Real team, do you feel that the tie feels more like a loss?
Well, I mean, I don't want to reference Salt Lake, but I'll say any time that we don't get 3 points at home, we're disappointed. Because we've been a very good team here at home for quite some time now. We like to put on a show for our fans. We like to be, you know, very aggressive at home and get our points. So that part is always a disappointment. And, you know, the guys walked off the field like it was a loss. And I kind of had to remind them in the locker room, like, come on, man, it's the beginning of the year. We've got things to work on. But there's a lot of positives from that performance that we can build on and continue to move forward. One of the things I'm challenging them is that we look like two different teams in the first half and the second half, right? And so from the, you know, sometimes at halftime, then when they come in, I'm trying to encourage them to get themselves going. It's almost then like from the first whistle in the second half, they show more confidence, they show more urgency, they show more belief, and they come out and they look more like us. And I feel like if we had six games that we've played so far, where we played in the second half, if we would have played in the first half like we played in the second half in each one of those games, we'd have six positive results along the way. So, you know, we're a new team here. We've got some younger guys on the field. We're encouraging them to keep themselves going. But I promise you, this team will get better as the year goes on.
Going back to Chris. Jesse, we're talking a lot about formations. Would you ever consider a 3-4-3? Because looking at that roster, it seems like it's something you guys could do pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, we could consider a lot of formations. You know, we could consider... Yeah. I mean, that we have a lot of good players on this roster, right? And so... we like right now to work on our pressing tactics and our movement, ball movement when we have two strikers. We think we have really good potential players to play up there. You know, when Sasha's here, obviously, then trying to figure out how to maximize the most out of him in both the little bit wider spot and the spot underneath is important. Sometimes playing him as a second striker. So, listen, we've played five in the back before. We've played a lot of formations since I've been here, but... You know, the tactics are really just nuances on roles, and what's most important is playing the way we want to play.
Going back to the comparative slow starts, all the way back to Champions League up to now.
Yeah.
In your mind, is that just not coming out with the right mentality in the first half? Is it, you know, you guys think you're well conditioned and where you're about the second? I mean, in your mind, what do you attribute that to?
I put it almost squarely on confidence from the start to go out and play the way we want to play and not be concerned about we're going to make a bad play or something's going to go wrong, but be more focused on now making things happen that are right. With young players, you know, when they start now elevating themselves in a team, it's normal for them to have a little bit of anxiety, especially when the game gets started and they don't want to make a mistake. And I actually thought our team got rolling, and then Luis maybe made a play out of the back, and then all of a sudden, and then maybe Damian lost the ball, and then all of a sudden it was like tension grew within our team. So, you know, again, we're in the beginning stages of the season. Not everything's going to be perfect. We'll learn from our mistakes, but I'm trying to get them to go out on the field and really just go after things and play the way we want to play and be committed to that, knowing that that will make positive things happen and not worry about the negative things. Is that clear?
What?
Clear?
Wrap up.
Can we play that tape in the locker room?
Last question over here.
Can you just talk about Mike Brella? What's going on with his leg and if he's
going to
stay
playing? Yeah, it's the same issue with Mike. He's going to have 3 to 4 weeks off because we're going to try some treatments with it and hope that we can. It's his knee. It's like his knee / quad muscle. So we're trying to try some treatments there to see if we can solve some of the pain issues he's having. And we're hopeful that it means that there'll be nothing more that needs to happen. But, you know, so it's going to take probably 3 to 4 weeks.
So he hasn't had surgery?
He has not had... He has surgery.
No, I mean, again.
No, he has not had a second surgery. He's having treatments right now.
Thank you.
And that's head coach Jesse Marsh on the match. And obviously, thank God Mike Grella doesn't need a second surgery, or else that's it. The season's over. And he is a player that is very, very important to the lineup, or at least coming off the bench now to start this season. And you saw him when he's on the field, he makes things happen. So you have to say that for Mike. Thank goodness it's just a knock and not something serious. It's also nice to see Connor laid back and finally getting a start since the ACL tear at the LA Galaxy last year, neck nutty 2-2 draw. So here's Connor Lade.
How did you feel?
Felt pretty good. And I kind of just wanted to go out there and not really think about it. I think didn't really think about my knee the entire time. Really, I was just kind of trying to get into the game, trying to, you know, complete that first pass and that first tackle, and kind of just get back into the swing of things. And I thought that you know, definitely was good to knock off some of that rust tonight and, you know, overall just let myself go and not really think about it too much and just kind of try to play my normal self. So I think overall it's pretty good. A little frustrating not to get the 3 points tonight, but I think there's some positives we can build on.
You came out midway through the second half. Was that by design, or were you starting to feel something or fatigue? Or
no, it was by design. You know, Justin wanted to push me. You know, we kind of capped it at 70 minutes. We were saying I wouldn't go longer than that, and he said, you know, we'd check in between 60 and 70. So I think he was, you know, it was by design. So, you know, it wasn't anything bad. I just, you know, simply his choice.
In the lead up, did you
your win?
Yeah, no, I felt pretty good, you know, in that sense. I've been doing more fitness in the past 7 months than I've ever wanted to do in my life, so I think in that sense I felt pretty good. Still, I mean, you can't really replicate game fitness, so it was good to get, you know, the longest I've played in a while, so it was good. Overall, I felt good.
In the lead-up, did you expect to start, or did you have an inkling that you may start in your return?
Yeah, I think we kind of set this date, you know, a little while ago, just so you kind of mark this down on the calendar that, you know, with the international break and, you know, maybe missing some guys, that maybe this could be a game where, you know, if I was feeling up to it, that I could be in, you know, kind of the selection for maybe starting, but definitely being the 18. And so, you know, I'm just happy it worked out tonight that I could get that start and put it in 60 minutes.
I apologize. Right. How much confidence did you get playing for Red Bulls 2 that you said I could take it to the first team?
Yeah, it was great. You know, ideally, I wish I could have played a little bit more, maybe. But, I mean, it was good to get. I got a solid 45 against Bethlehem in their last preseason game. And, I think that was huge for me. You know, I really tried to really push myself as hard as I could because I knew that that would maybe be my last chance before really, you know, maybe being in with the first team. So I, you know, tried to lay in some pretty hard tackles there and see if I would come out on the right side, and I did. And so it was good to push myself there for sure.
And that's Connor Lade on the match. Glad to see him back out there and glad to see him doing well. So good to see Connor Lade out there back at it. A little over 45, 50 minutes, but you know what? Well-deserved. I'm glad to see him back out there. Bradley Wright Phillips had some decent moments, mostly in the second half where he had at least a couple of half chances, but nothing clear-cut. But still, though, gave Van Okkel some issues in net, and Van Okkel was able to make some saves. So here's Bradley Wright Phillips.
Bradley, how frustrating was today considering you kind of controlled the game in the second half especially?
I think it looked like what we, not from our point of view, the way we played, not tactically, but it looked like, you know, what we thought it would. They come for a point, and I think they got it.
Did you feel like, obviously, their goal was to frustrate you, not allow you to press hard and just foul you all over the pitch?
Yeah, it felt like that sometimes. It felt like that sometimes, but We've obviously got to do more. You know, we're gonna come up against that again, you know, this season, and we've got to find ways to not let that affect us. But at the end of the day, it wasn't the prettiest game, but we created chances. I missed a good one. Freddie, I think Danny had a shot from the edge of the box. You know what I mean? We had chances where we could have scored. So it looked like the Colorado game. We could have, you know, we could have got a goal from one of the plays, but we didn't. You know, we're not firing on all cylinders right now.
How do you like
those? All of those chances?
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Is it fair to say almost all of those, most of those good chances were in the last third of the game?
Nah, not at all, because I had one in the first half, a header. I think, I think in there was another one in the first half, I can't think, but a couple good chances where if we're cleaner on the day, we can get a goal from.
Two straight matches with a second striker up there. How do you like that as opposed to being a lone striker?
To me, it makes no difference. Like, I'm up there, my job is to score goals, you know, and work hard. And, you know, when I play in either one, that's what I'm trying to do. It's all right. I don't mind it. We've got to get better at it, just like we had to, you know, when we first started our normal formation. We had to get better. It took us time, and I think that will come soon. It's only four games in.
How do you feel this new formation? Jesse stressed the point of it, to help you guys defensively not give up goals on the break.
Yeah.
That's something you guys have happened.
I think that's happened. I feel like we're so much harder to score against. The defense has been the best part of our team. You know, I think in the past, it's been, you know, the attackers have you know, usually almost carried, you know what I mean, the team, we outscored teams, but now it's good that we've got something to fall back on. We can almost take our time, and that's what we've got to learn to do, be more patient and just know the goal's going to come.
How critical were they in the second half? Particularly there was a 5-minute spell where they had three yellow cards.
Yeah.
And how difficult did they make it for you to play as a team?
I don't know. I don't think they really made it. I think the referee's got to, you know, speed the game up. Man up and speed the game up. You're letting them time waste. And at the end, what was it, 3 minutes? It's ridiculous. You know, so they're doing what they obviously come to do. They're going to do. They're going to do things like that. I don't blame them, but come on, man. Get a hold of the game.
You guys, in most games, you guys have the better possession. And you guys create chances.
Yeah.
I don't think there's very many games where you guys don't create chances. But you guys haven't had that many clear cut
chances. Yeah, clear chances, yeah.
Is it formation you guys
looking
to?
Nah, it's not the four. It's definitely not the formation.
I feel like
the front four were just not sharp enough at the moment, you know. And it's not for the want of trying. I think we're trying to do things, but it's just like we haven't got into a rhythm, you know, yet. And I think you guys know when we do get into a rhythm, we're like, I think, the highest scorers in the league. So it's not. It's something that doesn't worry me. I know it will come, but just I hope it comes sooner rather than later.
You said playing with the second forward doesn't change the speed, but it does in some sense. You know, you're not occupying just the whole speed, the final third by yourself.
Yeah.
There's somebody there. How do you kind of play off? I mean, he's brand new, so he's
yeah.
How have you kind of just trying to read the body language? How
yeah.
You working on that.
Just trying to link up. You know, just trying to stay close. It obviously helps when we're closing down. You know, when you've got one up front, you close down. You're all alone. But. Yeah, with the two, it makes, you know, closing defenders down a lot easier. They don't just think about me.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that, you know, we can take. But, you know, the more games we play together, I think the easier it will become.
Did you feel Kostas with international duty, you missed him today? Or just everyone's fine where they were?
If we didn't create any chances, maybe you could say that. But, you know, obviously Sasha can create chances in most games he plays in. But today, no, I thought we had enough. Like you said, not clear cut, but chances that, you know, that we on another day we could score.
What do you think about playing during the international break?
It's annoying because now we've played a game we didn't really. If we got 3 points, then it wouldn't have been bad. But now we haven't. You know, stupid rule, stupid.
What do you think about the USA performance?
Yeah, it was good. You know, they had one job to do, and that was get 3 points. And it wasn't just that they got the 3 points; it's how they done it. Everyone looked up for the game, and you know, credit to them. It's a great performance.
And that's Bradley Wright Phillips talking about that matchup and attacking in the home match against Real Salt Lake. Tyler Adams, he's probably going to be on the Under-20 World Cup team as they qualified for the Under-20 World Cup. And, of course, winning the first CONCACAF Under-20 Championship for U.S. Soccer. I thought he looked fantastic. I thought he looked fantastic. Everything looked to be solid for him. And you know what? Why not give him an audience and let him speak about the match and about being how the Under-20 tournament gave him the opportunity to get ready for the season. Here he is, Tyler Adams.
So how was it for your first start for the 2017 season against Salt Lake for yourself out there?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of emotions in the first couple of minutes, a little jumpy and nervous, as always, but it's almost been a year since my last game with the team. After getting acclimated with the U-20s and winning CONCACAF Championship, I was excited to get back in with the team.
Did that help you just get this start today with the Under-20s?
I mean, it kept me sharp, that's for sure. Not being with the team in preseason, they had 4 to 5 weeks to get sharp, play as many games as possible. So while I was with the U-20s, I was fit and, you know, playing games, so that helped a lot for sure.
How scrappy were they for you in that defensive midfield position?
RSL?
RSL, yeah.
They have some good players for sure. Sonny and Mulholland, you know, they pick up second balls, they run, they cover ground, they're aggressive. They made it hard on us for sure in the middle of the field.
Can you tell us what happened early in the first half, that little haphazard play where it was a bad pass or they picked you off and Salt Lake went after your net and all of a sudden some craziness, but they didn't go in that ball?
Yeah, I forget what it was. I think the ball came back on a corner. I played Luis, and I think he tried to play Damien or something like that, and the ball didn't come off well. And then Sebastian Saucedo was running at our goal, hit the post. They had another opportunity, and we saved it off the line and made a big play, for sure.
How do you think you did? You had the most touches for the whole team, one of the highest percentages of passes. How did you think you did?
Yeah, I mean, for our system that we play, completing the most passes isn't that important for us. But counter-pressing and pressing the team and picking off second balls and going to goal quickly is what we strive for. And in the first half, we were a little slow to do that. In the second half, it got better. We created more chances, but we still couldn't find the back of the net, unfortunately. So now we're just preparing for Houston. We're going to watch video and see what we could have done better. More to that, yeah.
Do you feel like you're adjusting to the physicality of MLS?
Physicality is not really a problem to me. For myself, I'm a small player, a physical player, but, you know, I pick up scrappy balls, scrappy plays. That's what I try to do.
Tyler Adams on the match as the New York Red Bulls and Real Salt Lake play to a scoreless draw. Let's just give a quick blurb to Red Bulls 2 in the USL. First match on the road at the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. A 3-3 draw probably should have been a 3-point win for Red Bulls too. But you know what? A draw is not bad either. Great goals from Bezicourt and Florian Vallot. Great rips in the 18 and as well as outside of it. And of course, Bezicourt gets the penalty to make it 3-2 at the time. But former Red Bull Corey Herzog gets a brace himself. But still, though, great action. If you watched it live Saturday after the Red Bull during the Red Bull match or after it through YouTube, and just great action going forward. Now, tomorrow night, USA at Panama World Cup qualifying. Join me along with Carter Krishnire and Matthew Klimberg as we do pregame 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific, as the United States will be down in Central America again to take on Panama. And then after the match on beIN Sports, midnight Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific, join me once again with Carter Krishnire, with Chris Gluck, as well as a little bit of Stephen Brandt, of course, Gluck and Brandt from the Yellow Card Podcast. They will join me on postgame. And you know what? Any form of points would do here. A draw or a win would be – look, a win would be awesome for the United States. A win would just be awesome to see. It would be fantastic to crow and gloat about it as United States, if they can beat Panama, depending on what Costa Rica does on the road in Honduras, because if the USA, if they can get that second victory, and if Costa Rica, if they can get a loss down in Honduras, you know, this is going to be interesting, even on points. And then it'll be all on the goal differential, because at the moment, it's +3 on Costa Rica in the second position. The USA right now with a +1 and in the fourth place position for the playoffs. So we'll see what happens. But I'm telling you right now, folks, what happened on Friday night at Avaya Stadium in San Jose, California, was just absolutely incredible and just absolutely mesmerizing. And I still haven't watched – I still haven't stopped watching the highlights, because Dempsey was unreal. Bradley was good. Pulisic was awesome. I feel bad for Sebastian Leggett because of the injury he suffered after he tapped in the first goal. And right now, if you're looking at the standings, Mexico, 7 points top of the table. Costa Rica in second with 6. Panama in third with 4 points. The USA in fourth place with 3 points, +1 on the differential. Trinidad and Tobago in fifth place, of course, 3 points, -3 on the differential. Honduras in dead last now, getting shellacked, also 3 points, but they're at -4 on the differential. So goal difference is key. And it's huge, absolutely huge in this situation when you're seeing the USA going from the basement to being in the playoff position. So a big moment there for the United States. But once again, the New York Red Bulls, 0-0 draw with Real Salt Lake. I want to thank my guest, Brian Dunseth, for coming on, talking about the RSL things and a little U.S. men's national team, a little bit about Klinsmann and all that fun stuff. And you know what? Look, I encourage fair and open ideas and fair and open constructive criticism, because we're not going to sugarcoat anything here. Not going to sugarcoat anything. If it was that bad, then it shouldn't have happened. So that's all I got to say about that. But once again, everybody, join me tomorrow night, pre and post, USA at Panama, World Cup qualifying. Watch it on beIN Sports USA English. Listen to me before and after the match and my guests. As always, please enjoy your football, and we'll get back to the regular stuff next Monday. Bye-bye for now, everybody. Talk to you next time. Take care.